Joe's mum asked him to open the boot of the car. She had everything needed for cleaning. We carried the whole lot into the cottage. She walked in. "Well," she said, "this little cottage has the makings of a great home." Over the next 2 days we did a lot of cleaning. Spending that time together gave me the chance to really get to know Joe's mum, and we had great fun together. Those 2 days were wonderful and we got an awful lot of work done. Joe's mum was brilliant. And by the time our wedding came around, the cottage was habitable just about. Chapter 13, Telling Joe. One morning down in the cloakroom at work, Pauline and I were chatting about wedding dresses and she asked the supervisor if it would be possible for us to have a lunch break together so we could go to the fabric shop. The supervisor agreed and put us on the same lunch break. When lunchtime came, Pauline and I went to the canteen, had a 5-minute lunch and headed out to the shops. We looked at hundreds of dress patterns and rolls of fabric. It was very exciting. Eventually, after many lunch breaks of looking, I found a fabric that I really liked and which, I felt, would be suitable for a wedding dress. It was cream with little wine-colored wildflowers scattered here and there. Pauline found a beautiful fabric that matched the flowers on mine. But I didn't buy anything just yet. I knew Mum would want to come shopping for my wedding dress with me. Even with all the time we spent together looking for fabric, I hadn't told Pauline about the wedding reception being at home. I dreaded the thought of telling her and the other two girls. One day, I asked the angels when would be the best time to tell my friends and they said, "Right now."
"You mean
now, on our tea break?" I asked.
"Yes,"
my angels replied. When I walked into the canteen I saw Valerie and Mary sitting at our usual table. I went and got tea and biscuits and joined them. As I sat down, Valerie asked, "Lorna, we are dying to know where the reception is being held." My friends were all smiles and full of excitement. "It is being held in my parents' house in Lookslip," I said. I could see from the expression on their faces that they were shocked.
"You are joking, Lorna?" Mary said.
"No," I said. "I wouldn't joke about something as important as my wedding day." They asked me all kinds of questions then, including why my mum and DA wanted to have the reception in the house. I told them it was kind of a custom in my mum's family and that mum's heart was set on it. Then they asked who else was coming to the wedding. "It's mostly family. My parents and brothers and sisters, some of my uncles and aunts, Joe's family, of course, you two and my bridesmaid, Pauline. We'll be about 30 in total for the meal. Some neighbors are coming to the church." A few days later, while I was sitting in the canteen having lunch with my friends, Val said she had a few suggestions to make about the wedding reception.
"How about, Lorna, if we all leave after the meal, and go into Dublin to a pub with music and dancing to celebrate?"
"It's a great idea and I'm sure Joe would agree," I replied, "considering that we won't be able to dance in the house."
"How are you going to get to the church in Lookslip that morning?" I asked.
"We are going to meet in Dublin," Val answered, "and get the bus to the church. Let's hope it doesn't rain, because we don't want to bring coats. And I hope it's not too long a walk to the church, because we will all be wearing high heels."
"2 minutes," I assured them.
"Make sure you are all early." They laughed and said they were really looking forward to their day out. Later that day, when Pauline was helping me tidy the rails just before closing time in the fashion department, I said to her, "I guess it's time for me to tell you where the wedding reception will be held. I have already heard from the other girls that it is at your parents' house," Pauline said.
"I think that is great."
I told her it was nice of her to say that. When I got home from work that night, Mum suggested we should go shopping for the dress material on my day off, the next day. I was looking forward to going into town with Mum and buying the material and pattern for my wedding dress, even though I had already chosen it and knew exactly what I would buy. I hadn't, of course, told her this. I knew Mum would enjoy going around the stores, so I said nothing. Going in and out of the fabric departments and stores in Dublin with Mum the next morning was fun, but Mum was getting a little annoyed because I didn't like anything I saw,
although she saw lots that she thought would be perfect. "I don't want a traditional dress," I said to Mum, "and I definitely don't want to wear white. There is one more fabric store, Mum, you brought me to it once, it's down a side street beside Clary's." After a cup of tea, Mum led the way to the fabric store. We looked at lots of material on big rolls, some standing and some lying flat on counters. When we came to my chosen one, I said to Mum, "I think this material is beautiful, I love the cream color and wine wild flowers scattered around it, and look, this one, standing beside it would be perfect for the bridesmaid's dress." "Yes," Mum nodded. "It is beautiful. They would go together very well." As my mum said those words, angels arrived all around us. As Mum asked, "How much does the material cost?" I nearly burst out laughing because I could hear the angels' voices, like a chorus, chanting, "No price tag, no price tag." I knew the angels had made the price tag disappear. Mum decided to ask one of the staff the price. All the angels stopped their activity and waved their hands, indicating no. I knew then I had to stop Mum, because she was going to think the material was too expensive and try and get me to buy something cheaper. This was something I would not allow, but I didn't want to hurt her either. "Don't worry, Mum," I said, "I am paying for the material and pattern and all that I will need for the dress. Let's look through the pattern books." The angels took Mum's arm as we walked to the back wall where all the pattern books were. Mum opened one of the books and started to look. I suggested that, to save time, I would look at another one. I must have looked through 5 books before I found the pattern I had seen before. I called Mum over, "Look, this pattern will suit the material I have chosen beautifully." Mum was very good at making clothes and she knew how to read the back of the pattern and see how much material I would need for both dresses. When Mum had finished calculating the amount of material that was needed, we went to the counter and I asked the assistant for it. She got the 2 rolls of material, laid them on the counter and measured the material out, yard by yard. It piled up on the counter and the girl folded it perfectly and put it in a bag. She also put the patterns and all the trimmings we needed into the bag. "That's £25.99 in total," she said. As I was handing her the money, Mum said she wanted to pay for the material for my wedding dress. I was pleased by her offer but said, "No, Mum. It's too much." But Mum kept on insisting, so I let her pay. She seemed very happy and proud as she handed the assistant the money. We said thank you and as we were leaving the shop, one of the angels was standing at the door. I thanked the angel in a whisper, and then we headed home. As we walked to the bus stop, carrying the bags, I thanked Mum. I was like a little child, full of excitement, wanting to show Joe the material and to bring it over to his mum's house. Then, that evening, Joe's mum said, "I will have to meet your mother and father. Will you ask them can they come to dinner on Sunday?" When Joe dropped me home that night, I went in the back door as usual. I was surprised my mum and dear were still in the dining room. So I seized the opportunity. "Hello, was not expecting to see you up. By the way, Joe's mum has invited both of you to dinner on Sunday at 5 o'clock. Mum was not too impressed, but Dia said, "Of course we'll come. Tell Joe's mum we'll be there at 5 on Sunday." I was delighted and offered to make them a cup of tea. Dia refused and said, "Go off to bed." I said good night. The next day after work, I caught the bus to Joe's mum's house and I told her that my parents would come to dinner on Sunday. She was delighted, if a little nervous. I know she went to great trouble to have a perfect dinner that Sunday evening. When I arrived with my parents for dinner at Joe's, Da knocked on the door and I was glad to see it was Joe who answered it. Joe welcomed Mum and Da in and gave me a hug. We went into the dining room. The table was set for a queen. It was fabulous. Joe introduced his mum, his sister Barbara, her husband and their children. One funny thing happened at the beginning, though. Barbara kept on insisting Mum take off her coat and Mum kept saying, "No, it's fine." I pulled Joe out of the room and whispered, "It's not a coat, it's a coat dress. Tell Barbara to stop asking or I will burst out laughing. Joe said he never heard of a coat dress before, and when he went back into the dining room, his sister was asking my mum again, could she take her coat? Joe just interrupted and pulled out a chair for mum to sit down. We had a fabulous dinner of roast beef with roast potatoes, cabbage and carrot. For dessert we had her wonderful apple pie and cream. I've never had any apple pie that was better than hers. Joe's mum had really done us proud. Everything went well. All through the summer before our marriage, the angels had been telling me to let Joe know a little about my secret. I told them many times I was apprehensive. I wanted to be able to share my secret with someone, and especially Joe, but I was scared of his reaction. What if he did not believe me? You should only share part of your secret. The angels told me. A little at a time, no more than that. Keep in mind, Lorna, that you will never be able to share your entire secret. Some of it can never be told. Next time there is a suitable opportunity, we will help you. A few nights later, as Joe was taking me home, he suggested going for a drive up into the mountains. It's going to be a beautiful night, he said. There is a full moon and hopefully the sky will be full of stars. I know a place where we can park and have a wonderful view of Dublin and the sea beyond. When we got there were lots of other cars. Let's go for a little walk and maybe sit on the wall over there for a little while, I said. The wall was only a pile of scattered rocks, but we sat and Joe held me in his arms. We kissed and I felt safe. I don't know how long we sat there, but all of a sudden I noticed the sky was full of stars. Then some of them seemed to spin and fall, and as they came closer to the earth I saw they were angels. I could hear the angels say, now is the time to share a little of your secret with Joe. I turned in Joe's arms and said I had something to tell him. He looked at me and asked, was it something to do with the wedding? No, I said, it is actually about me. Let me explain something. I see things that other people don't normally see. Sometimes I see angels. A look of complete disbelief came over his face. He looked at me and laughed. Lorna, as far as I know, only nuns and priests see angels. This is ridiculous. Ordinary people like you and I don't see angels. I looked at him nervously. This was just as I feared. I silently called, help, to the hundreds of angels who were around me. He gave me a hug and said no more about it. Let's go. It's late and we both have work tomorrow. The journey home was silent except for a few words. Joe glanced at me now and then while driving as if to say, what have I got here? I was giving up to the angels, saying, Joe's not responding well to this at all. When we pulled up outside my house, Joe said, Lorna, you have asked me to believe in something that I haven't ever thought of before. But I felt a little bit reassured when he hugged me and gave me a kiss. As I walked round to the back door, I was still giving out to the angels. The angel said, don't worry, Lorna, this is just the beginning of Joe getting to know you. I wondered how I was going to be able to get him to believe me, but I soon had an opportunity. Although Joe no longer worked with DA, he sometimes helped him out in the garage. One Thursday evening as I finished work, I had a vision. I saw lots of glass, large windows, light seemed to be shining on them and blocking my vision, and yet it seemed to be dark. What's all this about? I asked my angels. The angels said, tell Joe. I really don't want to, I replied. Remember your vision, Lorna. The angels said. Now do you see where it is? Yes. It's the garage. That evening I told Joe. That does not mean anything, he replied. No more was said, but I was worried and I gave out to the angels again. On Friday, I had the vision again. This time I saw Joe in a car, as if he was driving it to the pumps for petrol. I saw men approach the car and Joe wind down the window. Then the vision was gone. I told Joe I had the vision again and explained in detail what I had seen. I don't want you getting hurt. It's a warning. I don't believe in that kind of thing, Joe said. Your DA rang and left me a message. He needs me to work the weekend. The man who does the night shift has left, So he has no one for Saturday and Sunday, midnight to 7 in the morning shift. I had the vision again and I was shown more still. I saw Joe wind down the window and one of the two men punch him in the face. Then I saw Joe in the police station, and the police believed the other men, not Joe. I couldn't make out what it was all about. I was upset now and giving out to the angels. Joe will have a bleeding nose. The angels said, but otherwise he will be okay. Remember the vision, Lorna. The police may not believe him, but it will be all sorted out eventually. After work I went to Joe's mum's house and Joe and I went for a walk around the housing estate. I pleaded with Joe to believe me. I was mad with him. I said, why won't you listen to me? All the time his guardian angel was whispering in his ear. I wanted to shout at Joe, your guardian angel is trying to tell you, but you won't listen. Joe promised that, because I seemed to be so upset, he would be very careful over the weekend. That weekend the vision unfolded, and it all happened just as I had seen. One evening Joe was repairing a customer's car and went to fill it with petrol. A friend of the owner of the car was passing and believed Joe had stolen it. He yelled at Joe and when Joe wound down the window he punched him in the face then called the police. The police did not believe Joe and arrested him. DA bailed him out and everything was sorted out. But that evening Joe got another insight into who I am. 2 weeks before my wedding, Pauline, Valerie and Mary took me on a hen night to celebrate. I had never been out after work with them before. They took me first to Smythe's, the pub that Valerie went to most Friday evenings, which was full of people who worked in the department store. Valerie and Mary seemed to know everyone in the pub, and there was a lot of laughter. They were used to drinking, but I was not. They encouraged me to have a glass of wine, it went straight to my head, which my friends thought was hilarious. One glass was more than enough for me, as I could really feel its effect, and after that I stuck to 7-Up. We went from one pub to another, on foot, until we ended up in Mary's favorite pub, Murphy's. There was a great atmosphere there. The floor was concrete with potholes, there were no tables. Only stools at the bar and the place was packed with people singing Irish rebel songs. I loved the music and singing and we all joined in. We went back to Mary's bedsit in the city centre and had a cup of tea and some biscuits and chatted about the evening. My friends teased me about tricks they could play on Joe and I on our wedding day. We had a good laugh. I had a great night, but I was glad to get home eventually and go to bed. It was getting closer and closer to our wedding day. Almost everything was ready and my wedding cake had arrived at the house. One of my aunts had made it as a wedding present. It was fabulous, 3 tiers tall. She had done a wonderful job. I still have the decorations belonging to it, too. They have been put away in a box somewhere. With 2 days to go, the house was spotless. Both families were ready and, on the eve of the wedding, the neighbors called into the house to see if they could help with any last-minute things. Anne, our next-door neighbor, assured me that she would be over early in the morning to do my hair. It is wonderful to see the happiness that weddings can bring to family, friends and even neighbors. Ate to see all the excitement that is inside everybody come to the surface. Whenever there is a wedding planned, I ask all the angels of the universe that the wedding can bring happiness and excitement to all of those involved. Finally, my wedding day arrived. I hardly slept the night before and I was up early. We were all up early. I was too excited to eat breakfast, so I just had a cup of tea. One of the most precious moments was while DA was taking everyone to the church ahead of me and I was standing in the hall, with one of the neighbors, waiting for him to come back for me. When D arrived back to the house, he escorted me to the car and sat beside me in the back seat. He did not say a word, but just held my hand. When we pulled up to the main entrance of the church, D said, "Don't move," and he got out of the car. The driver had come around to open the car door, but D insisted on opening it. As I got out of the car, the smile on DA's face made me happy. He took my hand. Just as we entered the church to walk down the aisle, he told me in a gentle voice how proud he was to walk down the aisle with his beautiful daughter on her wedding day. As I walked towards the altar on Dia's arm, I could feel my guardian angel ruffling the hair that my neighbor had spent so much time on that morning. I could see Joe standing at the top of the aisle, looking in my direction. He looked so handsome. Beside him stood his guardian angel with a big smile on his face. Angels then started to appear on the altar: Michael, Hosus, Elijah, Elisha, all the angels who have been with me over the years. The altar was packed with angels. The priest stood there waiting. Joe and I walked to the altar and stood before the priest, and the ceremony began. As Joe put the wedding ring on my finger, Hosus tugged at my dress and joined me in saying, "I do." Outside the church there were lots of photos taken, and, back at the house, we had a wonderful meal with my friends and family sitting around one big table. Later that evening we all left the house and Joe and I went with our friends for a drink in the local pub. It was packed, though, with no space for a bride and groom, so we made our way into a pub in the center of Dublin. Joe and I didn't stay long before we headed to Maynooth where, in the early hours of the morning, Joe carried me over the threshold of our little cottage. Chapter 14. I never knew I had a guardian angel. Sometimes the angels do not give me any warning before an event. One evening, when Joe and I had been married 3 months, something strange happened. It was about 11 o'clock and Joe had gone to bed and was reading a book while I was tidying up and getting ready for bed. We had no bathroom in the cottage at this time, so I was washing myself in front of the fire. I was only in bed about 5 minutes when I needed to go to the loo, so I climbed out over the end of the bed. I opened the bedroom door and I got a shock. I nearly walked into someone. "Oh my God, what are you doing here?" I exclaimed. Mrs. Costello, the old lady who had lived in the cottage until she had died, was standing in front of me. She looked just as Elizabeth had described her. She was dressed in her coat and a wonderful hat with netting and what looked like fruit on it, and she carried a big bag under her arm. "Goodbye," she said. "I am off now." She smiled at me. She looked beautiful, perfect, just like Mrs. Tiggerwinkle. I don't know why she needed to say goodbye to me, but, if that's what she had to do, then that was fine with me. She had given me such a start though. I turned round and got back into bed. "What's wrong?" Joe asked. I nearly walked into her, I said to Joe, forgetting that I hadn't yet told him that I see spirits as well. "I just met the old woman who lived here before us," I told him. "She just came to say goodbye." Joe sat up in the bed and looked at me, startled. He told me to get back in bed and under the blankets. I did so quietly, hoping that Joe wouldn't think too much of the incident. He didn't. He turned around and went back to sleep. Clearly my angels were working hard. Joe never mentioned it again. I lay there talking to the angels, asking why Mrs. Costello had nearly let me walk into her. "I don't like walking into a dead person, a spirit that has not yet gone to heaven. It feels unpleasant, sending electrical shocks through my body. A spirit that has not yet gone to heaven has not been purified and feels completely different to a spirit which has gone to heaven and come back, like my brother Christopher. With spirits who have returned from heaven, I feel the life force of their soul." The angels told me that, for some reason that they never explained, Mrs. Costello was unable to leave the cottage until she had made contact with me, and that she needed that contact in order to be able to go to heaven. I can't explain this, but frequently I encounter souls who have not yet left this earth and gone to heaven, and for some reason I have a role to play in their passing over. A few months later, I became pregnant. Joe decided he would sell the car in order to be able to afford all the extras we would need with a baby on the way. So we were back to traveling by bus, and we both laughed about that. I found the pregnancy hard and I gave out to the angels and God all the time. The angels just laughed at me and told me to rest. My baby decided to come into the world a few weeks before his time, a beautiful baby boy almost 7 pounds in weight. We were so happy. I had told Joe, long before, about my baby brother Christopher who had died as an infant and my desire to call my first son after him. So we had already decided we would call him Christopher. I never told Joe about my encounters with my spirit brother, though. I have never been allowed to share those encounters until writing this book. I asked Joe not to mention to my parents the reason why I wanted our son to be called Christopher. When my parents came to visit me in the hospital after his birth, Mum said we should name our son Christopher A after her D.A., my grandfather. I smiled at Joe and said we had already chosen the name Christopher. Joe squeezed my hand. When I brought Christopher home from the hospital, I was like any young mother, a nervous and fussing over him. He was strong and healthy, but one time when I was looking after him, the angels appeared around me and told me he had a little problem. I notice he's not digesting the milk properly. Am I right? I asked. Yes, said the angels. Wrap Christopher up well, put him in his pram and walk down to the telephone box. I did as I was asked, and when I got there I was glad to see there was no one on the telephone. I rang the doctor and asked him to call to see Christopher. The doctor called that afternoon. It was a very cold day and lashing rain. The key was in the hall door and the doctor called out, "Anyone at home?" As he walked in, I was sitting by the fire with Christopher on my knee, feeding him. I smiled at the doctor because all the angels followed him in. He sat down on the chair and said that it was lovely and cozy and heated his hands by the fire. He played with the baby for a minute and then asked me what was wrong. I told him I didn't think Christopher was digesting milk properly. He looked at me strangely. The angels behind him told me to be careful in what I said. "He throws up a lot," I added. "Lorna," he said, laughing, "all babies do that." As the doctor pulled his chair closer to examine Christopher, one of the angels touched Christopher's tummy and he threw up. The milk went flying across the room. The doctor looked at me and said, "That's not normal." The doctor put a stethoscope to the baby's tummy and commented that any time he had seen a baby do what Christopher had just done, they always turned out to be celiac. He then gave me a letter to see a specialist in Temple Street Children's Hospital in Dublin. Christopher was indeed celiac, so from then on he was on a special diet. This meant there were a lot of visits to the hospital and sometimes Christopher had to stay in for a few days, which was hard on him and on us. Joe worked on the garden every spare moment he had, and I must say it was really starting to take shape. One day, when I was watching Joe working in the garden, his guardian angel appeared for just a brief moment and then other angels appeared around Joe, as if they were supporting him. I could see that the light around him was very weak. I started to cry, saying to myself, "No. It's not fair." I knew the angels were showing me that Joe was going to become sick. He did. He became very ill with a gastric ulcer shortly afterwards and he was much sicker than most people with the same condition. This was to be a pattern with Joe, for some reason that I never fully understood. When he got sick with something, he became much sicker than other people. Despite a special diet and lots of medication, Joe was very ill and unable to work for 6 months. As a result, he lost his job with the transport company and we had to depend on the state social welfare to survive. It was a very difficult time for us and, although I didn't know then, this was a pattern that was going to continue for the rest of his life. One day, when Christopher was about 18 months old, I brought him out to the front garden to play, locked the little gate and walked back into the house, leaving the front door open, to make the beds. Angel Elisha appeared for just a moment. "Hello, Lorna, I'm just letting you know that you are going to have a visitor." Before I could say a word, Angel Elisha had disappeared. I laughed and said, "That was a quick visit." Elisha did not reappear. I did not give it another thought and continued making the beds, every now and then looking out the window to check on Christopher. When I walked into our little front room, I noticed a flash of light on the doorstep and heard a little laugh. The spirit of a little girl walked into the hall. She had long, black wavy hair with dark blue eyes. She was dressed in a coat with a black collar, a hat and knee socks with black shoes. She danced into the kitchen and smiled at me. I followed her into the kitchen. This little spirit still had her guardian angel with her.